to create interest rates. They get the bank way to create money with the loans that they're giving out daily. That means our money is dead, and we gotta pay back more than 100%. No wonder then why the middle class is going under, and the ones above them gotta cover income to collect. And many have no access to banking, making payments and saving, so more fees are taken. Every day the gatekeepers are trying to stop change. We cannot wait. Welcome to the blockchain.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Henry Rain Show here on WWPR 1490 AM. Heard weekly at 12.05 p.m. every Saturday. Your weekly roundup of Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, and blockchain news, and more. It's another week, but this week the South Korean market for crypto had hiccups and the global crypto market choked. What did CNBC viewers learn this week that our listeners found out over a month ago? Kodak, Overstock, Grayscale Investment Trust, excuse me. We look at blockchain fever on Wall Street in the second half of the show. And U.S. Treasury Secretary Mnuchin weighs in on cryptocurrency. Well, it's a full house today, so let's get started right away.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars.
Well, back in the studio after a week hiatus is Sabine Priestley, the science fiction, fantasy, romance novelist, futurist, engineer, and much, much more. Sabine, good to have you back.
Thanks. It's good to be here.
And working our way around the table here, let's go right next door to... Actually, except for Andy, everybody's been on a week hiatus. Good to have you back, Alex Solis, Solis Digital Assets.
It's great to be back. Thank you.
All right. Well, let's keep this thing moving because it is a full house today.
Don't really care. You live life. Get back your fuck right out of my control.
Not too many hiccups.
Yes, well, you get to a certain age, that happens. And Augie, welcome back. How are you?
Well, I'm glad to be back. And all the hiccups aside, I hope people are securing their assets in some form of hard cash.
All right. Well, nothing changes. Well, it could only be one of two people with that intro, and it's the chief technical officer for Byte Federal back in the house. Lennart, how are you?
Thanks for having me back, Henry.
By the way, I understand a new listener out there, been in crypto for a while, had a chance to speak to you, Jocelyn. You spoke to her. You may not know by name.
Yes, that's right, actually.
Yeah, she texted before the show. Hopefully she's listening right now, but... if not, she'd probably catch it on the podcast. And finally, working all the way, sometimes to the far right, sometimes to my near right. Today, at least for a moment, he's on the near right. TradingView.com's 20,000-plus follower, columnist, GoldBug1, a.k.a. Andy. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Henry. I'm glad I could be here.
Well, let's see. I think we still have show left after we do all these intros. So let's quick remind a couple things here. We have the meetup coming on January 27th at Mocha Joe's. A lot of interest at the last meetup. We talked about that last week. Again, I think we've doubled our members on meetup.com. You can get your information there about it, but it'll be at Mocha Joe's starting at 3:30 on January 27th. Also on January 27th, right in a very timely way, and it's going to be a little bit of a topic later in this show, text time is coming up, and we're going to have Alexi Kutin, who is a CPA out of Tampa, that's one of his specialties is cryptocurrency and the tax implications there. So that's something that we'll be getting to shortly, but in the meantime, there's a lot going on this week, and we'll get to all of that.
I tell you, I've got news for you. Mm-hmm.
Well, we were going down until we came back up, but it was down for a lot of the week, and much of that had to do with Korea. The Blue House, which is the South Korean equivalent of the White House, the executive office and official residence of the South Korean president, has announced that, here's the latest, there will be no cryptocurrency trading ban in the short term. The South Korean government's official announcement came after a massive backlash and criticism against the Ministry of Justice, which independently announced its plans of banning cryptocurrency trading. The ministry did this without the consent of the Ministry of Strategy and Justice and other government agencies involved in the South Korean Cryptocurrency Regulation Task Force. Early reports on this, I guess from our mainstream media, didn't even seem to cover much of this. And in fact, even on the day that the rebuttal had been announced, CNBC was still, and Bloomberg even longer, was still saying that the trading ban was going to be in effect. There's more to this story, but I know we have a CNBC addict in the studio here. Andy, you were following this, I believe, probably at least half the week on CNBC. What did you see in their reporting?
Well, I don't know if it was really CNBC reporting it, but it just seemed like the South Koreans needed a little extra time to accumulate some more coins there. I just don't see this news. It comes out. It came out with China. It's now come out with South Korea. I'm sure we'll get another one, but it's just it's a lot of FUD. I mean, as they say online.
What does that mean?
I have absolutely no idea. Does anybody know what FUD means?
Fear, uncertainty, and
disillusion, maybe.
Doubt.
There we
yeah.
go.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but you know, when you get times like this, you just got to put on the blinders and ignore the news because. News doesn't drive markets. The markets drive
markets.
Well,
the great thing is we know which ministry in South Korea is run by the Chinese now, right? It's the Justice Department.
Well, the South Korean people have something to say about that. According to the Blue House, more than 60,000 citizens voted in a petition to fire the head of the Ministry of Justice, Park Sang-ki, who released the premature issuing of the statement there. Also, immediately after Minister Park released the statement, the Ministry of Strategy and Finance emphasized it did not support or agree with the decision. That got lost in all the FUD after the first announcement. It also added that the ministry had only found out about the statement through media reports. That never happens in our government.
Never.
And the decision to ban cryptocurrency was not agreed upon by the task force. So I wonder if the Ministry of Justice... I don't even know how this happens. I don't know enough about the South Korean government to know how important a task force is. I know we have task force, and I think a lot of officials probably don't even pay attention to that. Anyway, by 2016, just for people that were following, the former South Korean president was impeached by the people of the country, although I have a feeling the Justice Department there had something to do with that. Anyway, so it looks like this is off the table for a while. One of my thoughts on this was, you know, there's the plurality of trading is going on in South Korea. And it's just like here now, if anybody tries to pull the plug on this, and we're going to get to Treasury Secretary Mnuchin later, you know, there's a lot of people that are part of the establishment now. That have millions and millions and approaching billions of dollars involved in this, and you just don't pull the rug out on people like that. Now, Alex, let me go over to you, because as you look at these different cryptocurrencies, the different tokens that you look at and keep your clients aware of at Solis Digital Assets, one of the main places people go to look is CoinMarketCap.com. And they made a unilateral decision earlier in the week that threw a lot of people off. It's something I mentioned, I know, to Andy last week about the big disparity about when you're trying to figure out what the pricing is, that sometimes as much as a 15-20% difference between some exchanges, and they average all these different exchanges around the world and give you a single price. What do you think about their removal of the Korean exchanges before this ever happened? From their algorithm to get to the prices, and how do you use that? Do you even use that to give your clients advice, or what do you reference when you're trying to find the price across exchanges?
To me, I only use three exchanges, so I only care about the prices on those three exchanges. I'm not going to risk my money on any other exchange. I think it was a great decision for them to do that because the arbitrage is getting ridiculous in crypto. You have like $5 here, a dollar there for the same coin. It's just silly.
So explain how someone would arbitrage. And just as a preface, though, with the time it takes to move things, sometimes that arbitrage will turn against you. But so you see a potential arbitrage. What are you seeing, and then what do you do to respond to it? You have a coin at five, and just to make it a big number so we can understand it, you see it at offered for a dollar on the other side of the world.
Yeah, if you have like, I think arbitrage is great. If you have 1,000 coins of one, and it's a dollar, right? And then on the next exchange, it's $5. You just send it over there real quick, sell all of them, boom, you made $4. That's $4,000 in basically an hour.
Right, and foreign currency exchanges, this has been going on for decades, and it's computer assisted, but they're trading for pennies, or sometimes a penny would be a big profit for them if they can do it instantly over and over and over again, and it creates a better rate of return. Now, let's go to Lennart. Some of the things that would be required in that arbitrage is the speed of the transaction. What are we finding when you try and do that now?
Right. The one of the biggest issues, I think, where we see this discrepancy between the exchanges is just the banking system. Because at the end of the day, you have to settle your money, you have to move money through the banking system, and that's where you have regulators or regulations in different countries, and it becomes infeasible. And what you see in some of these spreads is just the difficulty of actually moving the money around. Otherwise, we would see the same price across all the exchanges, and we don't. When it comes to a purely coin-to-coin, if you will, arbitrage opportunities, so those disappear very, very quickly just because there's, even if there might be a delay between one to the other exchange, overall, though, you can get the price very close between the exchanges.
Augie, now you work it with traditional items, let's say gold or anything. Have you ever been able to do an arbitrage in gold or... you're using traditional trading mechanisms, and that you don't have that kind of speed.
Oh, mine's real estate, and that's stretched out.
I thought you were into commodities like gold.
No. Gold is no.
Not in the past.
In the past, mm-hmm. In the past. That's why I'm not in it now. Exactly.
Okay. What about you?
Well, one difference between trading like with, you know, gold and stuff and futures markets and even stocks, even though they trade on the American, you know, the Amex, the New York Stock Exchange, or other exchanges, when you're on a broker, your broker looks for the best price across all the exchanges. So that narrows the arbitrage trade down. And if there are high-frequency traders that do an arbitrage trade on it, but as a general rule, those, because of the because you're getting the best price on any exchange at any time, the arbitrage comes down. Well, in the case with cryptos, you know, it could be trading on an exchange in Korea or an exchange in China way lower or higher than it is here in the United States. One of the issues with doing an arbitrage trade over there is you do not have access to some of those exchanges because they do not allow American citizens to trade on them. So that makes the arbitrage a little bit more difficult unless you're from out of the country. Am I correct, Leonard?
Yeah, you would have to have a company there or someone who can handle the other side of the trade there.
The one thing I'm going to interject, you asked me this question. The problem is when you're dealing with brokers, which is often what you're doing, the brokers are going to lean to bullion versus certificates, and people get tripped up on that very matter. That's why I avoid the broker's ideas. I'll just buy bullion directly and forget the broker in this thing. And any arbitrage or any value somewhere else is not trustworthy. You may as well just pay the piper, pay a premium, and get the hard stuff.
Well, I want to bring Sabine into this, but before I do that, let me remind people or tell you for the first time, perhaps now, if you haven't heard in past shows, that we are currently streaming the show video live on Facebook. On Facebook, go to the Henry Raines Show Facebook page, and you'll find it there. Hopefully we've solved the problem of the recorded audio that we play on the show not going through the Facebook stream. So hopefully if you get on there, you can give us an update through the comments of what you're hearing there. And, I mean, we're either going to be able to play the audio for you or you're hearing nothing now and you're just wondering where the subtitles are. Let's get Sabine in here. Not so much on the arbitrage, but on the the fact about where we started here, the Korean market and how it affected everything. And, again, we saw a lot of softness in the market. When did you first get into owning cryptocurrency?
It was really recently. It was, I think my first buy was in June.
Okay. Well, actually, that makes you sort of an old-timer.
It feels like it around here.
Yeah. But, so you've been through a few of these ups and downs. But I know looking at it, and, you know, although I followed this story for 5 or 6 years now, May was when I first got into the market. So not much before you. But having done stocks, you'd see these drops. And when I first got into it, I was trying to trade it like stocks. Oh, my gosh, I made 20% in a day. I better clip this profit.
You wait a year for those kind of returns in the stock market.
Yeah, right. And I said, oh, I'm so much smarter than this. I can make this every day. But if I had just held still, which I realized after a couple months of watching this, I would have done much better. But still, watching it this week, having been through this now with the Chinese scare, with other scares that caused the market to drop, with the Bitcoin Cash thing, it still causes a sinking feeling in your stomach when you watch that the numbers go down, doesn't it?
It does. It absolutely does. But this is so I've talked to a number of you guys, and it's very new to me. So I'm on this massive learning curve and doing a lot of research, and I've got sort of a split personality. I've got a pile over here that I own that I'm ignoring. I'm just pretending it's not there. And then I've got this other pile over here that I'm doing the classic kind of skim 10-15% off now and then and hold. And it's, yeah, I sold when I shouldn't have on some things. They probably, tripled. But because I've got this other pile over here, I'm doing really well.
How do you allocate that? What percentage to which?
This is a gut check. I'm following my intuition on this.
So like half and half, two-thirds to a third?
Like
how much of your total, how much do you put on the side you're holding? And what percentage do you put on the trading side?
So this is an evolutionary thing, and this is a relatively new thing. So my biggest stash right now is in the top three, Ethereum, Litecoin, and Bitcoin. And then my stash over here, I'm probably up to 12 or 15.
Right. I'm not asking about the number of coins, though.
Yeah.
What I'm asking is, I'm not saying you have $1,000, but it makes for an easy number. If you had $1,000, would you allocate, like, $700 to the hold and $300 to the trade? Or half and half? How would you break that up?
It's more fluid than that for me.
Okay.
It really is an intuition thing.
I know Andy is already...
I'm ready to step in here. I'm sorry, Henry. I'm taking over the mic here. And this is a common thing with traders and investors. And when you're trading without a plan, without a predefined percentage of what you're holdings and what you're trading with, you will end up with a big mess on your hands. And then when you need to exit the market, and this happened to me last week, as I wrote about, I had 15 coins I was trying to get out of, and it was a total cluster. But what I recommend, and I even wrote about it 2 days ago on a
column. You are
Collins,
a prodigious producer.
Yeah, it is a 70-30 portfolio, and that's 70% is long-term. You do not touch them. Now, it doesn't mean you can't reallocate and reposition your portfolio if one becomes overweight like Ethereum has this week. But the other 30% you allocate for trading and for pulling out of the market when markets get rough. That way you have cash on the side when it dips, and you're waiting for those dips.
Right.
That takes the fear out of market dipping. So that's important to have a plan and a strategy to execute.
So let me just ask you a quick question, then I want to go over to Alex on this. When you look at, because you're more of a newbie than Sabine. Yeah.
I'm shocked to hear that.
Yeah,
when did
yeah.
you first buy?
August.
August 28th, right before the big dip.
You might as well just say September. That was like on Labor Day weekend.
Literally before the big dip.
So let me ask you this. When you look at your rate of return on each pile, where are you? Or do you look?
Well, yeah, to be fair and honest, I will tell you this. The 70% portfolio outperforms the trading portfolio. In effect, that is, if I was just purely trading, I would not outperform the 70%. However, what that 30% gives me is the opportunity to buy on dips. So like right before December 20th, when we called the big dip, where we said, hey, the market's getting a little murky here. It's time to pull some money out. We went to 30% cash, but we kept our portfolio in there because you never know when the market just might shoot up behind you. So that 30% allowed us to come in and buy on the dip.
And I want to get over to Alex on this. And Alex, I know you don't give individual personal investment advice to your clients, but when you speak to them about different approaches and in an educational sense, what do you tell your people? Because I know you're going to have a coin of the week in a little while, and sometimes they just take off. Sometimes they sit there for a while, and then they take off. There may even be one, I can't think of one, that went the wrong way on you. What do you tell them?
Well, I'm definitely with Andy's approach. You know, you definitely want to have long-term holds, and you definitely want to have some you're trading with, so you don't have to keep putting your own cash into the market. You can just day trade these and dump them into your long-term holds, and so you're not taking all your cash out. And you're also going to, when the dip happens, you got plenty of money to work with.
All right. Well, I'm going to set this up, and I know the contrarian is going to take over here in a second. But I would say there's another approach, too. A hybrid of Andy, and I've heard him talk about it, that some of people on that hold pile are looking at, you know, three-digit returns and mid to high three-digit returns. It might be time to take your original capital out and start diversifying back into things like the stock market or real estate or commodities, because take something off the table and diversify. I know Alex probably isn't ready to do that yet, but Augie, what do you think about that advice?
Well, of course, that's wise, and wisdom is really short when all you're doing is speculating. I want to ask Alex, how much has he set aside in hard cash that's not in virtual currency?
Alex getting set up here. Virtual currency is relative.
No. Okay, so
without arguing the point,
then your bank account's a virtual currency.
Well, now I just heard the Andy say he cashed in virtual currency for gold, hard gold.
Now let me rephrase this question, make it a little easier on Alex. When do you plan to diversify out of cryptocurrency and spread your assets in a broader field?
I've been looking now. I can't find nothing that's better than crypto. Honestly, I like great returns. I want fast money.
Let me move this along, because I'm going to give you a suggestion that you will like later in the show. It'll give you a chance to set up that account. It won't move you into something different, and you'll still be a naysayer because you'll say, I can do it better myself. Augie, 10 seconds to wrap up because we got to move on to another topic.
Well, I want to see a bank account that's not in crypto in Alex's case, because he's been in a situation where the other kind of non-virtual currency would have saved his rear end, frankly. I know it, and I won't go into it. But when you don't have that, then you end up relying on other people to bail you out, unquote.
Listen, I did make over 20K, and I did pull out probably like 5 G's, and I did spend about 3 G's of it. So I have 2 G's
on something very practical, I'm sure. Yeah. And let's keep moving along here, because we have a long way to go here with some other topics. I do want to just give you a quick update. Now, this is as of yesterday. The rebounding in the total market cap of all the cryptocurrencies came back over $720 billion on yesterday. That's in a day's turnaround from the previous day, Thursday, where it was at $630 billion from the last drop it had. And one of those things that came back was something you've heard about here. In the tease at the beginning of the show, I said CNBC listeners, or viewers, excuse me, you get to watch them. Well, you're viewers. You could be viewers now. By the way, hi to June that's watching us on Facebook. And when you put your name up there on that, we can say hi to you as you log on to the Facebook and the live video stream. But we weren't a month ago. We weren't live streaming, so you were listeners at that time. So CNBC viewers got the big scoop from Brian Kelly this week about this up and coming cryptocurrency Stellar, which we first brought up to you. A month ago, Andy had written a column about it. I had been talking off-air about it, and right after his column, we started talking about it on-air. We talked about it at the meetup. And I know Andy's going to have an opinion about Stellar before we play the Brian Kelly stuff. I bet Alex will have an opinion about Stellar, and maybe other people on the panel. Maybe
Leonard should definitely have an opinion on Stellar.
Yeah, we'll let him come after Brian Kelly, though. What got your attention on this, Andy?
Well, I mean, it's first of all, they have a working product, and I love working products. Second of all, they have fast transactions. And third of all, they are the competitor for Ripple. And I think that entire market, and I know everyone is a Ripple hater, but it seems that the coin keeps going up and up and up and up. So there must be some Ripple lovers out there. Well, you know, I mean, a month and a half ago is at, 20 cents. So, you know, you gotta take a little break, you know, take a little off the top. And that's actually what I did. Took a little off the top and bought Stellar Lumens with it.
Let me quick get Alex's opinion on this, and then I want to go to Brian Kelly and then Lennart.
Okay, my quick opinion on Stellar and Ripple, all them. Well, why you know, Stellar's great, IBM, whatever, that's great, amazing. But how can you get rich on it? Why invest in something you're not going to get rich on? There's just no point. It's a waste of time, money. It's a great company, but I want to be rich. I don't want to just make 5 cents with $20 billion added to the market cap.
But wouldn't a 300% return on your money be a good return in a 2 week period?
From a dollar to $3, that's pathetic.
Not the way Alex is picking them.
No,
Alex
right
is
now.
Looking at the 1,000. If it's not a 1,000% return, it's more.
I'd be so disappointed.
You can make an investment of any size you want. You could do 10,000 and go to 30,000.
But that's horrible. Why not put 10,000 into something that goes to $100 a coin like NEO, and you're rich? You're
How long did that take?
2 months, if that. From June to August, it went to like 100.
It went.
I could show you like 50 different points.
When we started talking about that early in the show, it was at 30. It went down. It came back up. If you're going to talk about from the low, but if you talk about the 6 months, you're at a 300% return holding for your 6 months.
That's just one coin. I could show you about 7 or 8 others
okay,
right now.
Okay. Well, we're not going to go into all these different coins. Let's get to Brian Kelly, and then we'll come back on this, and Lennart, and maybe even I. Surprisingly, we'll have an opinion about this, I'm sure. So this would have been, was this Wednesday or Thursday this week? Probably Thursday, because the market had started to come back, I think. All right, let's go with Brian Kelly, courtesy of CNBC.
There's one coin that should be the next shiny addition to your crypto portfolio. BK, why don't you head over to the class?
Why don't
get
I try
the crypto
to walk
class
and talk
going.
Here. So what's interesting about some of this regulatory talk that's coming out of South Korea is that there's a couple different agencies out there. I wouldn't be surprised if they go kind of the Japan route where they have really good regulation similar to have what we have here in the U.S. But let's take a look at one coin that was interesting to me that I bought today off of that Ripple news. So I think that Ripple news was very big. Ripple had the...
Wait a minute. How do we know he hasn't been listening to us on the side for the last 3 weeks? And then he decided, okay, maybe I'll jump in on this.
I think he's a viewer.
After the last dip, he's probably been waiting for a dip. He's probably been listening to this. This used to happen all the time on the old radio show we did in the morning here years ago. You know, all these big names listen, and then they get their ideas. But we'll let Brian Kelly have his time now.
The use case for it is to send stuff around the world. Now you're going to be able to actually use the currency, or MoneyGram's going to start doing that. So why don't we look at another one? Stellar. Stellar is one that is very similar to Ripple. It's created by one of the creators of Ripple. Effectively, the company split and they went out and created Stellar. They're already working with IBM. They inked a deal with them to do cross-border payments. So IBM has a payment system similar to what MoneyGram wants to do. It's faster and cheaper than Bitcoin. And what I mean by that is you can move stuff around faster and it'll cost you less than Bitcoin at this point in time. So those are the things that I like about Stellar. So let's go to the next slide. All right, MoneyGram deal with Ripple. I actually think this is a watershed event for the industry. The biggest problem that people have had is, okay, why do I use these coins? Well, you use it if you're MoneyGram, so you don't have to hold a lot of foreign currency. Other people are going to start looking to say, okay, how do I compete against MoneyGram, right? They're going to get their margins lower.
Okay, I think you can see where he's going on this statement. And there is a difference, though, between Stellar and Ripple. One of those is the marketing and who the potential client base or customer base is. But, Lennart, tell us about the... technical side of either of those and how they're different from some of the other things that you might look at. One of it is the proof of work, right?
Yeah, but I won't be able to help you much, though. I haven't looked into Stellar Lumens too much. I know that they issued for every Bitcoin holder and all the exchanges, they popped up some Stellar Lumens to get it going a few years ago, I think. And I sold mine right away. But I think the approach is very similar to Ripple. It's a more centralized approach. One thing I saw, though, in the discussions is that their API for actually developing on their platform is supposedly really good. That's one thing I saw in the tech discussions.
Well, and another thing is they mentioned IBM's involved in this, but the more critical partner that they have is Deloitte. And Deloitte services 80% of the world Fortune 500 companies. And so with money transfers, you know, Johnson & Johnson wants to transfer money, yada, yada. I mean, that's a very good partner. So I do like Lumens here because of that.
Well, one of the things that I find attractive about it, besides the investment side of it, is it sort of addresses some of the criticisms of Ripple. Although it is in some ways centralized, it doesn't exclude people that want to become part of the network. And then, so in other words, the nodes, and I'm getting already beyond my expertise here, we're trying to, what is a node, Menard?
Well, a node would be a server program running and taking care of the transactions flow through it. And one thing I just looked at is they supposedly have a list of vetted participants that become the angels are the ones that protect the network. But all of those centralized or ways of trying to make a centralized system work, it's tricky, you know. It's tricky because you are opening doors potentially for a later point in time where someone else could take
it. So they're trying to find something, as I understand it, a little bit different from Ripple, and that it's not quite as tightly centralized.
Correct.
And it's more open.
It's all these efforts after Bitcoin came along where everybody says, like, look, Bitcoin is eating up so much electricity, and we understand it's because it provides a social service generating trust out of nowhere that's decentralized. But maybe we can find a better way, and you have proof of stake, and you have lists like we see here with Stellar vetted individuals or Ripple individual institutions that are supposed to be the safeguards.
And I don't want to go beyond this because we'll really get into the weeds on this. But there's basically two approaches: proof of work like Bitcoin, proof of stake, which would be Stellar.
Correct. You could, I think, if you take the label proof of stake a little bit further, yeah, alternative systems where you have ownership, taking people who own the currency itself, making sure that the transactions get processed.
So it's a little bit open on who can get into it. It's also attempting to be a competitor to Ethereum, at least functionally, which might be a reason why Alex should take another look at it, because of the ICOs and these programs and contracts that can be built on top of it. Many organizations, I should say, I have seen, have shifted their plans from building on Ethereum to building on Stellar. And finally, again, for the people that find Ripple values, and I'm saying this by not monetary values, but the Ripple values against their liking, the thing about Stellar is they're not just trying to be the money changer for the big corporations. They're also trying to build out a peer-to-peer network where individuals in the developing world will be able to create, you know, you're shaking your head, Andy. I'll let you get in a second. We'll be able to bank for the unbanked, really. Let me get to Sabine, because she's having to sit over there and listen to the guys here. You're the futurist here, besides Lennart. You're thinking of all the ways that this can change lives, whether it's Stellar or anything else you've been hearing now, about how the developing world is going to take this on. Is it sparking any thoughts on your side?
It always does. It's to me, it's the decentralized bit, and it's also the access bit. In developing worlds in particular, as they get more technology in their hands, then they're able to use it. And how they use it, I don't know. I'm still learning this, too, from the technology side as far as implementation goes. And if you're dealing with proof of stake or you've got gas out there, and the platforms as platforms, so Stellar versus on Bitcoin versus on Ethereum, and all of the apps that can build on top of those, I'll get back to you on that one as soon as the chaos in my head starts to settle down.
It's actually really difficult because you see very innovative approaches mixed with strong marketing on scam coins every day popping up.
Right.
It's really amazing, actually.
And the sheer volume is staggering.
It's tough, really, to take separate the good from the bad. Actually, it's
very tough.
Well, we're going to go to a break right now. We'll come back with some of the other issues of the week. Also, take a look at how Wall Street is already involved, but how it made a few more plays this week. You're listening to The Henry Raines Show.